Hello, everybody. Welcome into another episode of the Comics Experience Make Comics podcast, a show where we talk about the nuts and bolts of making comics. And today we are talking about color in comics. And boy, I often think I should be rolling on stuff before we get going, but this is that hold up, show to people episode. I wish I had been rolling the whole time, because we have Heather Antos, editor, writer, color theorist. I'm learning more and more, in addition to her many, many other talents and penguin love, and Chris Sotomayor from all the comics that you know and love, and from all the packaging that you don't know that he did that you know and love, amongst other things, and other books that you know and love. Chris has been working with Comics Experience and Andy Schmidt for years and teaches the Intro to Coloring and the Advanced Coloring class, amongst other things, as well as being active on the workshop and just answering questions in general. And yeah, we were talking about different things that we could discuss on the show, and this one came up, and Heather jumped on it at an opportunity to talk about color theory. And we were trying to think, all right, we need to be wide enough, but also it's nice to go into specifics sometimes. And just from an editorial perspective, Heather had a great kind of a place she was coming from. And Heather, I'll let you go into kind of what sparked your interest, I guess, in even getting to color, and then, you know, hop into the general coloring in comics.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been coming from an art background. I've always been kind of fascinated by this like weird magic that comic book colorists seem to possess. And even before I did I joined Marvel and was doing indie publishing, I did flatting. I flatted pages for a fellow cartoonist, Jay Fosgate, back in Michigan, just out of more so curiosity of learning more about the craft and something to fill up my time when I'm watching trashy reality television. And when it came to becoming an assistant editor at Marvel, part of my duties was to, you know, give notes to colorists. And, you know, for me, it never made sense that I should be giving notes to someone that is more of an expert in their field of expertise than me. You know, I didn't know anything about coloring other than basic color theory I got through various art classes growing up. And certainly didn't know anything about comic book coloring. So it was very important to me to educate myself on the language and the theories and the best practices of modern day colorists, so that, you know, hopefully they can earn my respect or we can have mutual respect as collaborators on these projects together. And so I picked up, what is it, the DC's Guide to Coloring and Inking is this great book that I read. I got other basic Photoshop books and digital painting. And then, of course, I took the Comics Experience, like comic book coloring basic 101 class that Soto teaches. Just so I can have a better understanding. By no means can I color a comic. I'm terrible. But it's definitely not a skill set that I put that much actual practice into, but I've learned a lot about, you know, the language and the theory and the science behind it, so that I understand what it is a little bit better, this magic. So hopefully we can have a much, you know, more trusting collaborative experience.
I appreciate you going into that depth. just trying to understand the process and everything that entails. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Of course.
Well, I think from people just starting to do comics, coloring and lettering, and you all correct me where I'm wrong, I feel like that gets a short shrift sometimes, unless you're focused on that as I'm going to be a colorist or I'm going to be a letterer, or maybe you're a cartoonist doing all of those things, so you know that they have their due. And to me, that it's, Heather used the word, it's magic. It's this, oh my gosh, you made this thing, you transformed it into a whole different thing.
Yeah, like it's this thing that I think a lot of people, and Soto, I'm sure you see it too, is so many people think, well, I'm going to save a couple bucks and I'm going to color and letter my comic itself. I have Photoshop,
I did that. It is not good.
And that's the thing, like bad lettering and bad coloring can destroy a comic. I see it all the time. I would rather have just pencils than a badly colored comic any day.
Yeah, it sticks out like an eye score.
So from a basic level and thinking about it maybe in terms of your intro to coloring class, I mean, you're having to give information to a number of different potential kind of areas where people are, I really want to be a colorist and learn more about coloring, or I am a colorist and I want to improve, or I'm a writer, I want to learn about coloring, I'm an editor, I want to learn about, I'm an artist. How do you even, I guess, start to break down the basics of thinking about coloring or color theory?
Well, I mean, in the class, I teach it right from the ground up, like rock bottom ground up, and I teach it like an art class. It's not a Photoshop class or anything. It's all based on principles of painting and having some drawing ability.
It's very good.
Thank you. You know, the first thing I do is demonstrate how to open a file, right? And we go right from there all the way through. So everyone starts with the same knowledge base. I hope everyone, when they take the class, they throw out whatever preconceptions they have about color and their abilities to color, and they just trust that I'll at least show them a different way to do things that maybe they hadn't thought of before that might work better, you know, considering I've done this for a couple of decades now. And hopefully everyone seems to get something out of it, and I've never had anyone regret taking the class or express any kind of reservation about anything they learned or any disappointment. It's always been great reviews, great free feedback, and I actually enjoy having such a different skill level in each class with all the people involved, because I've had people I remember there was one class, there was one young lady who took the class. She was 16 and had never opened Photoshop before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She had just gotten Photoshop the morning of the class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And by the end of the 6 weeks, she was able to color two pages. Not spectacular. You know, she wasn't pounding out Laura Martin pages or anything. But she had a definite understanding of the basic concepts, and she had the skill to complete a page from beginning to end.
Nice. Wait, you're telling me I can't get to like Jordi Belair, Matt Wilson level in a 6 week class? What's the point? Why bother? Why bother taking it?
No one's winning an Eisner in 6 weeks now.
Boy, that should be a T-shirt.
Yeah. That actually is fucking brilliant.
But that's a great progression, though, to go from I've never opened the software, and I don't know her other background, but to be that young and to have that much initiative and want to learn how to start coloring for whatever her end goal is, that's great.
Yeah, I applaud anyone who takes the course, you know, just to even understand what the process is, you know, to whatever degree they need to know. Because I've had writers take the course, like Amy Chu took the course, and she came out with a way better understanding of what the whole process was. And that definitely allowed her to communicate with her talent on her creator-owned books and get a level of quality out of the talent that she maybe would have had more trouble getting.
Yeah.
Before. So, you know, I applaud anyone who wants to learn something that they didn't know before, just understand something that they weren't sure about before, you know.
And go ahead, Heather.
I was just gonna say, like, yeah, at the very, and again, just to reiterate, at the very least, learn the language, because I'm sure, Soto, you're probably like completely immune to it now. You've heard it so many times, but I've heard so many colorists hate getting the note, like, can you make this pop more?
That's my favorite note. That's my favorite, most hated note.
Well, yeah, because, like, what does that mean? It means nothing. You know, like, understand what is it that obviously you, or I shouldn't say obviously, but usually when someone gives that note, they mean they want something to stand out more. They want something to, quote unquote, pop out of the page. But that, you know, that could mean a whole bunch of different things. And what is blending into you? Is it the character? Is there not enough contrast? Like what's going on? And I just, whenever I hear someone say, oh, it doesn't pop, like that means nothing. That means absolutely nothing. And it infuriates me as an editor. I cannot imagine how much it infuriates you guys.
Oh yeah. I see that. And like, I get flush when I see make it pop. I need this to pop. We have, I don't know if you remember, Heather, but we have like a whole discussion in the class.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's like week 6 or something. And we discuss interpreting notes from your editors or art directors, because you're dealing with a bunch of different people. Like, let's say you're only working on one book, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm only working on one book, I'm looking to the penciler, the writer, and the editor for color notes.
Yeah.
So it's three different people with three different sensibilities, three different ways of communicating, and I have to figure out what the hell they all mean. And sometimes they'll contradict each other, which is always fun. You know, I've had that at every level of my career. I've had multiple people chime in on a book that I've worked on, and they contradict each other, and I got to figure out what it is they all mean, what they're reacting to. And that's the big thing. That's the test. It's what are they reacting to? Not what are they saying, but what are they reacting to on the page?
And, oh yeah. 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 Sorry not to cut you off. But like, it's the number one thing. Like when I was working, I learned actually so much about what you guys do as colorists and even pencilers and inkers working on the Star Wars books, because we would get these notes from Lucasfilm where Lucasfilm would be like, oh, his eyes are too big, or he looks cross-eyed, or, you know, like whatever stupid thing. And we would go back to the artist, and the artist would be like, it's not that, it's this. Like, this is what they're seeing. It's just making it look like his nose is too big, so I'll tweak this. Right. And it was just fascinating. I learned so much about how, again, the magic of coloring, how you can redirect the eye with just simply choosing where the light source is coming from, where you're highlighting, where the shadows are, the contouring. It's honestly magic.
yeah. I mean, but having the ability to parse all these different thoughts, you know, from different people, it's a skill set that you need to survive in this business. Yeah. You know, and especially if you're working across multiple books. Like I was telling you guys earlier, I'm working on like 5 books right now. So that's, you know, that's a lot of people.
Well,
it's like,
yeah,
15 people that I have to make happy.
And I was going to say, like, I'm sure having worked with, you know, certain editors over a period of time, or certain writers or certain artists, like, you learn their languages, you learn what they like, you learn. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. That helps. Longevity in creator relationships help. Having relationships with editors over a period of time helps. Especially the folks at Marvel, they're all really good, really patient. I've experienced similar things at DC. They're all very good, very patient, all very nurturing. And you know what? At the end of the day, I'm a soldier. You point me where you need me to go, and I'll go, and I'll do that thing. And after doing this for a while, I can usually figure out what people are reacting to, and I'll often not fix the thing that they want me to fix, but something else. And like you cited with that other artist, Heather.
Yeah.
And that'll magically fix the thing. Hey, this figure, it's not standing out enough. You know, can you make him darker or something?
Is he not popping? Is that
what he's you know, so I make the background lighter, and then it's not the figure being darker, it's the background lighter, and then the figure pops better.
So I have a question for you, Chris. What would you say is one of the most commonly misused or misunderstood thing about colorists that you wish either fans knew or the editors knew, collaborators knew? What would you say is the most misunderstood thing?
Oh, wow. That's a mouthful. There are things on our side of comics that I wish were better understood amongst publishers and editors in general. Don't skip the inking process just because it's going to save you money. Do it because the book's going to look, different or better or, weirder in some
Can I say,
upscaled way.
can I
Go
thank
ahead.
you so much for saying that? I was just having this conversation in the Valiant offices the other day.
Yeah. Skipping the inking process doesn't really save time. It's not it, I mean, it'll save you money in when you write it down on whatever sheets you need to write it down on, but it's not a good look all the time. It's really not. It doesn't work all the time. It works with some pencilers and some colorists who know how to do it. And I think, without sounding too full of myself, I think I kind of added to the problem. Back in the early 2000s, there was a book that Marvel published, Captain Marvel, that was the first monthly book shot from pencils. And we kind of proved that we could do it. And I worked really closely with the penciler, Crisscross, on a way to make the whole thing work. When we switched up artists along the way, there were some places it didn't work, some places it still worked. But it's not it's not something that can be done across the board with every book just because you need to save, 100, 120, 150 bucks a month.
So for listeners, just to clarify, for those of you who don't know what skipping the inking process is, or what that means when it comes to this, it means a penciler will hand the pages directly to the colorist, and they'll usually be pretty tight. Well, they have to be pretty tight pencils.
They have to,
Yeah, they have to be. And then usually over that, then the colorist and Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you'll do color holds. Or even do more high contrast on the pencils to get more of a black in there, but
yeah, definitely more contrast. And the thing is, like skipping the inking process, shooting directly from pencils, like you said, the penciler has to spend more time on his end of the pages, and the colorist has to spend more time on their end of the pages. And there's no time made up in the schedule. It's just there's one less person, but it's pretty much the same time on the schedule. So it's not always
And
the
it
way to
doesn't
go.
always, and like you said, it doesn't always, and I agree, it doesn't always look as good. Usually doesn't, in my opinion. That could be a
There's
taste thing, but
some colors who can pull it off wonderfully. Dave McKay, Laura Martin, Paul Mounce, Dean White, Justin, rest in peace. Those guys, they could pull it off in their sleep. Me, I struggle with it a little more. It takes me a little extra time. I can usually get something decent out of it. But still, it takes extra time. It's not, yeah, it's not a silver bullet.
No, it's a lot harder to get, I feel, contrast and separation. For sure. For sure. So for the colorists that do it and put in the extra effort, y'all rock.
And I gotta say, from the fan standpoint, there are a lot of times when they're reacting to the artwork as a whole, which is awesome because that's really what it should be. And maybe it's not a bad thing that they're reacting to the artwork as a whole, but I would like for them to appreciate that you know, a certain penciler, certain inker, and a certain colorist, when they all come together, you know, they tend to make magic.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Stuart Immonen, like Stuart Wade and Marte.
Yes.
Those three on any book, and they look amazing. Jerome Pena and Dean White, amazing. Lanil Yu and Laura Martin.
Yeah.
They're no brainers.
Yeah. Well, Chris Somney, Matt Wilson. It's yeah. Just, yeah.
Yeah. Like, but you change up, and you can put a great colorist in there, and you're going to get a different result with that mm-hmm. with that penciler. You know, not a bad result, but it'll be different.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember when Justin took over Ultimate Spider-Man, just the whole dynamic of the book was amazing. Mm. I remember when J.D. Smith took over Ultimate Spider-Man, and that was a great shift too. Like, the book went up several notches because he jumped on the book after whoever was coloring it. You know, and still the same penciler, mm. and great results. Mark Bagley had great results with J.D. Smith, and then, you know, amazing results with Justin. That's what the fans react to without even realizing
yeah.
that that's it. You know, it's that combo. It's that team.
I think it's a thing, though, that as, and social media has probably helped this, fans are starting to appreciate more the different components, like, you know, the unsung heroes of the industry. I've noticed people are starting to have fan followings of different colorists and letterers, and they're not necessarily like creators coming up in the industry. Like, I see chatter, you know, oh, Jordy's coloring this book, I'm definitely going to pick it up, you know, things right. like that. And that is so awesome to see yeah. because they're learning that, oh, if Jordy Belair is associating with this product, that means the product is going to be a good book, right. Which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some names that are just, you see them and you know you're going to get a quality looking product.
Yeah.
And I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, Joe Mulvey, earlier today. You know, we were talking about like top 10, top 12 colorists. And, mm. You know, it's Laura, Justin, Jordy, you know, Dean, Paul Mounts, you know, Richard Easenoff. There are just certain names that, you know, you see them attached to a book and you know that's going to look good.
Yep.
Just yep. right off the bat. You just know it.
For sure.
Yeah.
I think we're contractually obligated to mention Rich since he's a Comics Experience alum. I don't know if we have to mention Joe. I think that we can, we can, you know, Joe gets enough. He knows. You're referring to Joe Mulvey from Wailing Blade, which is currently on stands, depending on when you listen to this, which is a book that you were involved with Comics Experience's own Rich Duick, a graduate of courses as well as a workshop member, and it is a great book. And I might segue a little bit into, you know, knowing some of the history of that book. You worked with those guys behind the scenes for a while on different parts of that book. Taking a step back into, I'm not Marvel, I'm not DC, and maybe I'm an artist working with a writer, and I've never really worked with a colorist before, but we really want to do our comic that's creator-owned, or we're going to kickstart, or I'm a cartoonist just starting out and I want to learn how to color my own stuff. You know, what are ways I should be approaching that? Maybe I'll divide that up into, say, the Rich and Joe equation, where they need a colorist. What should people be looking for in a colorist at that level of, I'm just starting out and I want to find people to collaborate with, and I'm curious what both of you think.
I will say... Well, when Joe and Rich... Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to talk about Joe, right?
Yeah, just,
when Rich was looking Rich. For a colorist... Yeah, just Rich. When Rich by himself, he was looking for a colorist...
Or someone to color his words.
Yeah. well, they were looking for someone for a while, and they came to me and asked me to throw some names at them. So I threw some names at them, and I've been friends with Joe for years and years. And Rich, yeah, I met him through Comics Experience, but, you know, we talk fairly frequently, at least at conventions, and then online every once in a while we'll talk about different things. But I threw a bunch of names at them, and for some reason or another, one wouldn't work, one wasn't quite up to par, you know, one couldn't fit in their schedule or whatever it was. And then it just came down to, well, let's ask Soto. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take a stab at it. And it came in at a good time because, like, I had two things ending, and, you know, I was trying to figure out, well, you know, who am I going to hit up for the next thing? And I have to say, I've been very fortunate that in 20-some-odd years of doing this, I've only sent out maybe 3 cold emails to editors looking for work.
Wow. Good.
So, I'm very fortunate. And I try to maintain my relationships, and I try to be easy to work with.
Absolutely.
Which are key for longevity in this business.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah, so, you know, it all kind of worked out, and I told Rich, yeah, I'll come in and, you know, let me play around with some pages. Let's see if this works with you. And, you know, if you like it, I'll do some more, and, you know, we'll just keep going. And as long as the schedule was okay, you know, I was on. So,
And is it a fun thing for you to do a book that, you know, it's, I don't know how to describe it exactly. It's kind of science fantasy, the approach, I think.
Yeah.
It's not like straight up fantasy, and it's not science fiction. It's a story about a big guy that has a giant sword that wails, and he goes around and chops people's heads off. Like, it's
yeah.
It's great, by the way. And I also want to make it clear that I like Joe, because I realized that not everybody knows Twitter and DMs.
Oh.
But it, you know, it's a different thing. Is that some appeal to you to go, well, it's maybe not the same, you know, you could approach it a little differently, or maybe you don't approach it differently. Maybe it's the same kind of approach for what you think about.
The thing about that book in particular is that it involved a lot of world building.
Hmm.
Which I'm sometimes comfortable with and sometimes not so much. Books like Captain Marvel, I mentioned earlier. When I worked on that, there was a lot of world building there because there was space opera, alien planets, and all that shit. And, you know, it's wonderful, but after a while it gets exhausting because you're just constantly, you know, pouring so much into it. So since then, and that was like 20 years ago. Since then, it's me going in with trepidation. That's why I told Rich, since I'm not supposed to mention Joe, that I'll work on a couple of pages here and there, and we'll see how it all gels, and if it works, we'll keep going. You know, because that world building can be exhausting.
Yeah.
But the book itself is nuts. Like, that was the appeal for me, that it's just nuts. The sword is nuts. The design of the head taker is nuts. The designs of some of the other characters, which you'll see in, like, issue 2 and 3, like, those are nuts. And it's the kind of book where, you know, if I'm watching movies while I'm working on this book, then it's like The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
You know, it's stuff like that. I have to put things like that on that will just get me in the mindset. You know, it's a crazy book. Rich has a lot of fun with it. Joe has a lot of fun with it. So I go in and I try not to fall behind.
And you just ruin their fun.
Yeah. I crap all over it. That's me, fun crapper.
I think you really make that sword pop. I think that was the note. Yeah. Make the sword pop.
Yeah.
Oh, but your original question, I'm sorry, I went off on such a tangent.
No.
When you're looking for a colorist, or, you know, just a collaborator in general, I guess what you want to look for is work that has clarity.
Hmm.
It's very important when you look at someone's work. What I tell everyone in my class is, when you're working on your pages, squint.
Huh.
Make the page smaller, squint. And if you can see the right shapes that your eye is supposed to land on, you know, in an instant, then your page is probably reading fairly clearly. You're looking for shapes, you're looking for silhouettes, you're looking for that kind of organization where your eye just lands on the important thing. whatever the important thing is.
To piggyback on that, a thing that I started doing, and I don't know if I picked this up from anything other than me just dicking around on Photoshop, but I started when I wanted to check my pages, putting everything in grayscale at the end and making sure that I had a focal point, a very clear focal point in every single panel. And that was the easiest way outside of squinting for me, is if you make it in grayscale and you have, here's your clear contrast, you know, your very, very clear contrast of this is what the focal point is. And hopefully the focal point is what the intended focal point is. then I know that I'm directing the eye in the manner of which I want to.
Right. Yeah, I've tried to impress upon my students, especially in the last few sessions, that adding a grayscale layer to your page as you're working on it, just so you can toggle it on and off, that helps a great deal.
That's great. Yeah. I think all of that goes into the big swirl of just getting a handle on and starting to understand from a, whatever your creative perspective, you know, coming at it, but especially on the coloring side. And this is where I'm trying to make sure I'm not blurring lines from when we were talking before and recording now. One thing, a point that I thought that was super interesting that seems like it can't be underscored enough, is you're in a deadline-oriented creative services field. And Heather, you know, your initial thought of taking coloring, learning about color, was to how to talk, how to think. And I imagine you're both working at different folks in different stages of their careers that mm-hmm. are learning, you know, I'm just starting. Maybe it's my first time working with Heather at Valiant on a comic where I'm penciling or writing or lettering or any of the jobs I could get hired for as a freelancer doing work for hire. And right. you said it to something to the effect of, you know, it's in production. This is a train. It's moving. People need to understand the different component parts and how, oh no, you did this here. You just made us miss our launch date or our publish date. And I don't know that can't be underscored enough, especially in indie comics where you start to realize, oh no, I'm, you know, 3 months behind on my Kickstarter fulfillment, or I never feel like I finish anything. Why is that? It's such a big picture perspective that has so much to do with those details. You know, it's like any job. Once you start to boil it down to that micro and go, you know, what is the real note I'm getting here? You're also still doing that for 5 books and trying to ship 5 books and get 5 books done and do it to the best of your ability and the ability of your teammates, of your collaborators.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, and that's why I think being able to speak the language of your collaborators is more important than probably anything else. One's time. You know, if I am trying to tell, you know, talk to Soto and say, you know, I don't think the color of the sky is working here because of reasons X, Y, and Z. You know, that comes across a lot clearer rather than saying, I don't like this, you know, because I don't like this could mean 27 million different things. I'm not communicating clearly. Soto's going to come back with something that could be completely opposite of what I intended or what I was looking for, but he has no clue because I'm not communicating that clearly. And now we're on our 7th round of notes.
Right.
Tuesday, the book was supposed to go to print on Monday. And, you know, now everyone's behind on everything else. Like, it's not a good time for anyone. And I know Soto's laughing in the background because he's probably had this experience more often than
this exact experience last month. This exact thing. I had an editor, she approached me with something, you know, I did this job. It was, I think, a short story. And we were going back and forth on this one page. And she kept telling me the thing to fix instead of telling me what she was reacting to.
Uh-huh.
And she was trying to solve the problem for me without telling me what the problem was.
Right.
So me being a soldier, I did what she asked me to do. But we went back and forth 6 times. But it was 6 times. And yeah. And this went from, you know, this has to go out on Monday, and now it's Wednesday.
Mm.
You know, and And I mean, luckily she had padded the deadline. I knew it had to go out that week, not Monday necessarily. The preference was Monday because everything bottlenecks towards the end of the week.
Of course.
Another thing people don't know. oh my God, there's so many things people don't know about the production of comics. So we went back and forth for like two extra days. And that was time that was completely unnecessary because it got to the point where I said, well, what's not working for you?
Mm.
And she told me, and I'm like, oh. And it took me all of 3 minutes to fix. And
oh,
then
that's
she
so
said it was
frustrating.
Perfect. Yeah, it really was. It was very frustrating.
Oh,
we could have
so frustrating.
Had this all done on Monday. It would have gone out on Monday with
right.
no issues. And then whatever else needed to go out on that Thursday would have gone out on that Thursday in its slot. So.
Jeez. Yeah, yeah, see, and that's why communication.
Yes. I am always impressed by any editor or even penciler or inker who understands how to tell me exactly what it is they're feeling or reacting to.
Well, and then that's my thing is always to defer to you guys know better. Like I hired you because I can't do the job, so I'm gonna tell you, you know, this thing is bugging me, but I defer to your expertise. Tell me that I'm wrong.
right,
and tell me why, and if you can communicate, you know, clearly me why, which it's your language, so hopefully you can, then hopefully we can come to a compromise middle ground. Like that's one of the things that I love. I know I bring up Jordy a lot, but we work together a lot, that I really love and appreciate with working with her, is she always takes the time to really explain where her mind is when she's working. And so I know exactly what it is she's thinking and how she views the project, so I can view it in the same way that she does, so that hopefully we can communicate on the same page and come to the best, you know, best end result.
Yeah. Never feel bad about mentioning Jordy. She's awesome.
She's fantastic. I love her
really
so much.
Is. Yeah.
I love her so much.
Yeah. I mean, even just talent aside, she's just awesome.
She's just lovely.
She is. She is.
Well,
anything else for us, Joey?
I think you've solved coloring.
We solved it.
We solved all of coloring.
But it is one of those, and you know, I came at comics and comics experience as somebody trying to break in on the writing side, and my path into comics was okay. That also meant organizing people to work with. Okay, getting an artist to collaborate with, getting a colorist, and getting a letterer. And of those three collaborators, the coloring was the one that I felt like I knew the least about and knew how to think about the least and how to approach somebody to do, you know, how do we do this? It was the more, I get it. Like it's the thing that makes it go. But at the same time, I wasn't quite sure how to, I don't know, think about collaborating with that person or getting them what they needed. And I think that my experience over the years in creative services has developed into, you know, a lot of my first thoughts are, how do I get you what you need to do your job to the best of your ability?
No, so, I'm the same.
Yeah. and to try to understand that better. So for me, a lot of coloring has, my education is I'm trying to understand, how do I get you the thing you need to get from A to B? And sometimes, you know, maybe I'm sending you too many examples of what it, quote, feels like to me, or I'm thinking, or, you know, I want you and the artist to, like Heather was saying, you two are the people that can make this go. Let's figure out how to make it go. Excuse me.
Right.
And I've had moments, you know, trying to go back and forth between an artist and a colorist who weren't quite jiving, and try to figure out how to make that a better relationship for the two of them, but also for, you know, the pages coming out to where everybody was getting the most out of the pages. And that I've only had to do that, you know, a handful of times versus weekly, monthly, daily. So it's a whole other ball of wax to try to put your arms around, you know, to get a hold of, oh, this is the thing. Not that I think everybody's difficult, it's just communication. And like you were saying, the speed of comics and the production of it all. I don't know that I have like a final, how do you sum it up? But I feel like you've covered good ground about just kind of the general idea and, you know, from approach to how to talk to people and what some of the problem areas are, and especially on the notes side, because, you know, I'm sure it does take a little feeling out on a lot of books to get the feel right if you're putting together a new team. And I was curious because I remembered that Mark Begley had worked with Paul Mounts, and I just quickly Googled Begley and Mounts to make sure I was thinking of the right team on the coloring side, and I saw that Paul Mounts had done 100 issues of Fantastic Four in a row. Like, there's those things that you might not, like, I didn't remember that or didn't know that. Coloring is such a ninja kind of art that is the most obvious thing sometimes, and to try to get a better understanding of what goes on there, of why, you know, you love what book and so and so's pencils. Oh, it's because they're always teamed with this colorist.
Yep. Right, exactly.
And they make the world go. So I don't know that I have a specific kind of, you know, closing, but I don't know if you all have any general thoughts on how, if people do want to learn more, obviously you can go to comicsexperience.com and find out more information about the classes that Soto has there, and he's active on lots of different social media. I don't know if you have a preference. If I know you're always good about posting process stuff and talking about what you do on Twitter. But beyond that, if people want to find out more about what you're doing, is there a place they should go to?
You know, if they put Soto color into damn near anything, they'll find me. Because I just keep it all as Soto color, like the Facebook page, and, you know, my Twitter and my Instagram and my Day Flash and my whatever. It's all Soto color. So even Twitch, you know, I'm on Twitch. I have a YouTube channel going on. Just put in Soto color, you'll find me.
I see lots of things I want to look at, including these Wailing Blade pages, which are, I'm going to encourage people to check it out if you haven't heard of it or checked it out. Because it is fun and over the top and in the best comics way it could be.
It's nuts.
Heather,
it really is nuts.
And Heather, I think I was trying to determine the last time that we recorded one of these, EXO had not been announced, the EXO Man of War series. And now that is out in the world.
It is. Well, the series isn't, but the announcement
is. The announcement is that it's coming.
Yeah.
And what what else can you talk about? I know we also talked about you're doing some conventions as of this recording with Valiant. Any other big interesting things that have happened since we last talked that you can share?
Goodness. I'm traveling way too much. Way too much. I think last count I'm doing 15 shows in 2019.
Oh my gosh.
It's way too much, but oh well. you do it for the comics.
Do it for the comics and the airport bagels.
Exactly. So much Starbucks. I mean, all of my updates I keep on my website. I'm very active on Twitter, so anything big will be on there. Just released the solicits for Arc 3 of Livewire, which starts in August, which I'm very, very excited for. We've got some rad covers by Stacey Lee, interiors by Tana Ford, and coloring by Kelly Fitzpatrick.
Nice.
So it's a great, great team, and I'm very excited for y'all to see what we have been working on. And I can announce that I will have more announcements later this year.
Possibly at larger convention time?
Yeah. Come see me at New York, guys.
Look for info at New York Comic Con in what? That's incredibly short when I think about how many months away that is. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. This year is flying by.
It's flying by. And Soto, mention the books that you have coming out currently, because I know I've been ragging on the Joe and the Wailing Blade, but you said you have five things currently in the hopper.
I've got five books. Some of them are for Custom Solutions at Marvel, so those are not things that would be on the stands. But there's Wailing Blade, there's Batman Beyond with Rick Leonardi and Dan Jurgens. There's Noble from Lion Forge that I'm working on with Manuel Garcia. That's actually a lot of fun. That's coming to an end. I've got like my other project coming out that I can't really talk about, and there was another project that was supposed
Dick
to come
move,
out that
man.
I can't really talk about. And, yeah, I know, right?
Dick move.
I will be at New York Comic Con, and just like I have in past years, I'll be selling artwork and stuff and prints, and half of all my sales will be going to a charity. This time it will be going, it may be split between two cancer charities in honor of Justin Ponzer.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah, so if you're at New York, come by, buy a print, talk, say hello, you know, maybe get a sketch, whatever, and know that half of all my sales, not my profits, half of all my sales will be going to various cancer charities.
That is excellent. And
that's awesome.
You always have a lot of great stuff on display regardless. And people...
Well, wait.
Thank you.
Way to make me look bad.
We didn't even... I haven't brought up that both of you are teasing things that you can't talk about yet.
Yeah.
Soto's getting a harder time, but talk to me in New York.
Yeah, I just... There'll be an announcement about my announcement.
find Heather on the go at many conventions where she also can't tell you about her announcements.
I will say, though, if you do find me at a convention, I have shown them on Twitter. I did make a couple fun enamel pins, including my Make Comics pin, as well as my Penguin Don't Be a Dick pin. So if you want those and you see me at a con, I am selling them. I will have them on me. They're rad. Don't be a dick.
Awesome.
I'm going to have to find out what age it's appropriate for my 4-year-old to have that penguin pin. Figure that out.
I say it's appropriate anytime.
Maybe some light editing. This for a child who just last week said, "I never want to see you again." So I think she's probably ready for the don't be a dick pin. She'll be all right with that. Well, yeah. If you have a question you want to hear talked about on the show, email info@comicsexperience.com. We will talk about it here, and you can tweet at Comic Experience, and the fine folks who are on the Comics Experience social media will talk about it. The workshop is always great. If you go to comicsexperience.com, you can see different threads that are happening, and it's not all about comics, and it's not all about making comics in the sense of, hey, let's talk process. There's a lot of fun conversations, and I know that Soto and Heather jump in on those as well. And just talk generally if you liked, say, Avengers Endgame or what's going on in the news, industry roundup kind of stuff. So it's a fun way to get to know people over there, which can lead to better collaboration and collaboration period. When you get to know people a little bit and go, "Hey, you seem fine. If you have money, I will do work with you." Comics, the coloring, I feel like it is such a toe dip, and I imagine so much of it's just being immersed in and doing what you both have done in your different capacities and working in comics. But I think it was a fun way to start a coloring conversation. So I would certainly love more if you guys would like to come back and maybe we have a different angle to take and talk about more.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Anytime. Yeah, this was a blast.
Excellent.
Yeah, this was fun.
Great.
And I usually hate talking, but this was fun.
It's all that time you spent with Joe Mulvey. He just gets it all out of you, and you're like, "I can't talk to anybody else." Just blame Mulvey.
Joe's very special.
Well, yeah. Especially if you're Joe Mulvey, until next time, keep making comics.